Good morning. Good morning. Is it working this morning? Yes, I know. Talk about football. Good morning. How are you today? How did you sleep? Is it... Hello? On les voit pas en plus. C'est ça qui est pénible. Je sais pas s'il faut continuer de tester pendant je ne sais combien de temps.
English channel, English channel. Okay. Alors.
Okay, hello. Good morning. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, everybody. All right. Well, it's great to see everybody here so bright and early, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and all chirpy. I know some of you last night had a night out. Some of you may have gone to see the game or have dinner somewhere or even maybe a tea with the Queen. Who knows?
At 9 o'clock at night.
Yeah. With Ellie. Oh, right, good. Or Kate. All right, so again this morning we are here, and we have another packed session this morning, hence the reason why I thought we would start as soon as possible, because as you know, the day tends to be a long day. But before we do start, there are a couple of housekeeping rules that I did want to mention. One is that tomorrow we have a photographer coming over. I believe that's at 8:45 a.m. Morning. So, how is that correct? That we're going to have the photo session, so make sure you comb your hair. Well, if you're like me, you don't have much to comb. But make sure you come tomorrow or be here tomorrow in your best outfits possible, if you wish. So we have the photo session for the group. Are there any other housekeeping rules? How? That's the only one I could think of at the moment. But of course, we'll be in touch via email. So if there's anything that comes up during the course of the day, we will, by all means, inform you. Right, so today we have a rather interesting bunch of people, and I say interesting for several reasons. I happen to know a few of them. We have Tracy Hackshaw, who's the vice chair of the GAC, and I can't see the words there, but it does say Government Advisory Committee. That's another committee that we spoke about yesterday. We have this morning Sintra Suknanan from NPOC. I can't see it there, but it says a not-for-profit operation concerns. And we have constituency. And we have Mr. Bill Drake for the non-commercial users constituency. And I don't believe actually we could actually fit in another person. That's a Rafik Damak for the non-commercial. Somebody's going to... Someone's going to have to pay for my eyesight because I can't see that. All right, so I'm going to introduce Sintra because Tracy Hackshaw is not here as yet. But before I introduce Sintra, I'd like to let you know that Sintra is a very good friend of mine. She's an attorney at law, and she also happens to be from the beautiful country of Trinidad and Tobago. And also is Tracy. From the beautiful country of Trinidad and Tobago. So without any further ado, I would like to introduce you, pass you over to Sintra. Sintra.
Thank you so much. So this morning, I'd just like to have a very informal chat with you about NPOC, what we do, what our focus is, and how you can get involved. I really want to welcome as much participation from you in terms of asking any questions. That's the whole point of the engagement this morning. And I came early because I wanted to be the first one getting your energy levels high and taking advantage of that amazing breakfast. The not-for-profit operational concerns constituency is one limb of the non-commercial stakeholders group, which is the group that Rafik chairs and which he will speak to you about. The other limb is the group that that Bill chairs, which is the non-commercial user constituency. And that group tends to have a lot of individuals as well as academics. Our group is the home for the not-for-profits within the GNSO. It is the newest constituency in that it was only ratified in the Singapore meeting, which was not this last Singapore meeting, but a previous one. And so it's just been in operation for about 3 years now. So it's still very new. There's still a lot of scope in terms of getting involved. And what we do is we look at policies relating to not-for-profits with regards to the DNS. So we have quite a range of not-for-profits, from large international not-for-profits, such as GKPF, etc., as well as smaller not-for-profits, like my chapter of the Internet Society, which is the Internet Society Trinidad and Tobago chapter. So basically, if you want to sign up for our group, you'd have to sign up under the NCSG, but be an organizational member through the NPOC. I think that's it. In terms of, that's basically our function. We also have quite a lot of work that we're doing in terms of the NCSG, the structure itself. We have a charter review process that's going on in terms of our own internal work. There's this whole issue with the IGOs, INGOs, which is the protection of international not-for-profit domain names, such as the International Red Cross. So we have quite a few experts in our group that are specifically focused on those areas. Okay, so now I open for questions.
Okay, thank you, Sindra. That's very interesting. I have a question, but I will allow Martin to go first because he didn't have his hand up first. So, Martin, you want to go ahead?
Yes, my question is, what do you need to require to be from an official non-for-profit organization? Does it have to be registered in the government? Does it have to be, I can have my own, I don't know, internet forum, and that is a community, that is a non-for-profit community. How do you qualify for a non-for-profit community organization?
Thank you for that question. That's very good. Actually, there are two main requirements. The first being that you must be a registered not-for-profit in your country, as well as the second being that you should have a domain name. So therefore, the domain name system directly touches you as a user of the domain name system. So in our case, we don't have a domain name, but because we are an Internet Society chapter, a lot of the issues that come up in NPOC does affect us. When I say we don't have a domain name, we don't have a GTLD domain name. We actually have our domain as isoc.tt, which is at a CCTLD level. So if you look at the work of the GNSO, the work of the GNSO really is directly related to the GTLDs and the rights of users, as well as the responsibilities of registrants and creating that whole business environment. The CCTLD area is where you find the country code domains, like .tt, .uk, etc. So, in a sense, a lot of the nonprofits, they should have a domain name registered under the GTLD program, because the whole point of the GNSO is to comment and create policy for the GTLD program, the GTLDs.
When you say that you need to have a domain name, a GTLD domain name, for example, I come from an organization that is a human rights organization. We have a .org domain. Yes. That's okay. That's a domain name qualified. Okay. Thanks.
So all the others that are not CCTLD names, like none of the country code names, those fall under the GTLD, and you will find those have a separate rule and relation in terms of ICANN, right? The CCTLDs, because they were created first, they were created without many of the binding principles and responsibilities and contractual obligations to ICANN. So in a sense, they kind of fall outside of ICANN's scope, but they do come up with their own internal code of practice, which is recognized and adhered to.
All right. Before we go to the next question, I wanted to ask something. I'll be honest with you. I find NPOC to be very interesting because some of the development issues that face nations are dealt with at NPOC. And you may very well, I want you to correct me if I'm wrong here, Sintra, to see whether or not the issues like freedom of speech, the internet in your country, the development issues, so how internet can assist your country developing, and the other issues which I find very topical to third world countries have been discussed. So my first meeting in Durban, when I first went as a fellow, I did happen to go to NPOC, and the issues were so interesting. So I want to encourage you, as many people as possible, to pop into NPOC, because they are discussing things that may be very close and near and dear to you as a country, as a people, as a person. So, Cintra, this is where the question comes in. Do you want to tell us some of the issues that are currently being discussed at NPOC?
Okay. I first want to just recognize the presence of Sam Lanfranco. Sam is our membership committee chair, so I'm very glad that he's able to join us this morning. Sam has been doing quite a lot of the policy work within NPOC, and I'm thinking maybe I could punt this in his way so that, you know, he can also introduce himself to you, his background, as well as to answer the question.
Okay, thank you, Cintra. The background is very quick. I'm a development economist with interest in the internet. I got involved in ICT for development in 1978 in Geneva with UNCTAD, and I've been in it ever since. In response to the short question that has a long answer, I'll try and give a short answer, and that's that some of the issues, intellectual property issues that are a lot more complicated than the intellectual property lawyers think, are there. One of them is, if you're from a developing area, the kind of wholesale looting of traditional knowledge and turning it into somebody else's intellectual property. These are topics that we raise, but there's an issue here, and that's that ICANN itself does not deal with content. And it doesn't deal with the broader human rights issues. So within NPOC, what we're doing, and slowly, is we're worrying about two things. One is how ICANN's remit impacts on these things. But more importantly, what kind of education, awareness, and engagement process is taking place as NPOC begins to become, to service its members. It's not just recruiting members to be part of ICANN, but what kind of social dynamic needs to take place among the members. So you should think of yourselves as not just being recruited to be involved with ICANN, but to treat this as part of the learning exercise where you go out and you mentor others and teach others, and you help answer those kinds of questions, but you bring that back to your communities. You don't just, and then your communities bring it back to the appropriate forums. It may be ICANN, it may be your local IGF, it may be your local government officials who are coming to GAC and so forth. So there's a real dynamic there. The internet arrived without a guidebook and without a rule book. And we're building it at all levels. So some of you are here for a business opportunity, good. But you're also citizens of the internet, and so there's that kind of citizenship responsibility. So within NPOC, we're going to try and do two things. Face in toward shaping policy via ICANN's remit and whatever happens with the IANA transition, and reflecting back and saying, what are your concerns? What are your issues? How do we solve them with you, not necessarily inside the organization?
Right, and just to continue a bit on what Sam has already said, and we find ICANN in a bit of a different position than the traditional view of what it has been with the NTIA transition. We find that ICANN is questioning its role and its scope and the way it fits within the wider internet governance framework. Recently, this was not a common practice a few years ago. Recently, we've had proposals for ICANN workshops at the IGF, and those are being funded by ICANN, and in a large part approved by the MAG, of which ICANN does have some members who are actually directly on the board, on the MAG, and approving those workshops. So ICANN is moving a bit into the wider internet governance framework. How much they go into it is still yet to be seen, but the next few months will tell. So now is a very interesting time to be part of ICANN and to really see how things will change and to be part of that change.
Oh, thank you, Sintra. And I love the comment where you said that the internet does not come with a guidebook. So, and that is a fantastic. I heard that the first time in Durban, where, you know, this is all a learning experience, which is why it's so important to get involved. So you do have some say in how the internet develops. So let me see, are there any questions from... All right, before we go to Adrian, was there somebody who had a hand up before? If not, Adrian, you want to go ahead?
Hi. Hi. I'm Adrian Casal from Costa Rica. I'd like to ask you a quick question. Once you get involved with NPOC, does your constituency offer some kind of introductory help for new organizations, like to get to understand how they can be a part of the whole constituency in there, the issues in the environment?
Okay, so every month there's a GNSO newcomers webinar, which is a quick and dirty way to kind of find out what the GNSO is about, as well as how you can contribute. And in addition, it goes through the entire life cycle of a PDP. The PDP is the structure by which policy gets made in the GNSO. The advisory council committees come in afterwards to comment on that policy, but they don't actually take part in the PDP. We've been seeing a slight change in this with the emergence of cross-community working groups, of which the operational procedures are still being developed by the GNSO. Within NPOC itself, we find the best way to learn is to act or to do, to participate and to observe. So we encourage all of our members to take part in working groups and to actively listen to the developments within your own regional space and to contribute to them. Sam, you'd add?
Just a short addition to that. That's the introduction to the internal dynamic of ICANN. We're hoping, because we're very young too, we're hoping that what will happen is that we will be hearing from you as constituents saying, we need this, we need that, we need this. We need this not to better understand ICANN, but we need this to understand human rights issues and the internet. Or we have these issues, we're trying to figure out where we take them. So there's an educational and learning process here where you're going to be both students and mentors and look for students and mentors. It's very early in the game in terms of, you know, the internet came down the road like a train. Many governments, if they'd known it was coming like this, they would have behaved very differently over the last 20 years.
Okay, thank you. Alec, you had a question.
My name is Alexander Ichokayev. I'm coming from a developing country, Macedonia. That's how I got this fellowship assignment. I already got answer to my question. Just quick explanation. Is there any regional structure? I'm referring to RALOS.
So the structure of NPOC and most GNSO constituencies are not broken up into regions like LACRALO is. What NPOC does have is we do promote particular strategies for developing regions. So, for instance, we do encourage our African members to come up with an African strategy, as well as our Latin American and Caribbean members to come up with a LAC strategy. And these fall directly within the LAC space or the other regional strategies that appear within ICANN. So, to answer your question, we are bottom-up. And that is not a particular decision to streamline. We'd like to have everybody together so that we can all discuss the issues and see different perspectives. But if you from a developing country do feel that you want to maybe come up with a particular regional strategy or sub-regional strategy, we certainly will support it. And we will try our best to get some kind of support from the regional VPs as well.
Sorry.
No, just saying thank you very much.
Ampano, Amparo. Thank you. I think I got it this time. Okay.
Get it. Okay. Well, he said we need to ask pardon, forgive me for this question, but I have to ask. We have non-profit organization, non-commercial constituency, and at large. So I would like that if you can explain to us in a very simple ideas, the difference between MPOC, non-commercial, and at large. And of course, well, you will try to, because I think that MPOC deal or work in relation with NGNSO and the other NSO, yes, and non-commercial. And at large, what are the difference, what are the relation between them? Yes.
Okay, thank you so much for that question. I'm glad you've raised it. I mentioned to you that that I come from a ISOC chapter. And our chapter, we actually have members on the GAC, who's Tracy, that you will meet shortly. We have members within the at-large, within La Crallo, as well as we have members like me, who's within the NPOC of the GNSO. The difference is at large deals with policy commentary. They do not make policy generally. They comment on policy. So if you think of it, the GNSO are the policy writers, but the at large and the GAC are the policy commentators. Right? So they come afterwards. So in terms of a legal reference, I would call it more like the legislature and the judiciary, you know? So one writes the policy, the other one really comments and gives their input at a later stage in the process. Frankly, it's where you want to be or where you see yourself. Do you see yourself as somebody who would like to hold the pen in the initial drafting, or do you see yourself as somebody who would like to comment when it's done and see the document or the policy as a whole and comment at that stage? And frankly, if you have enough members in your organization with interest, you can do both. Because that is the beauty of the multi-stakeholder model, that organizations like ours can affect policy at both levels. The difference between, okay, so now I'm moving on to the difference between the NCUC and NPOC. The NCUC is the non-commercial users constituency, and they tend to be more individuals and academics, right? The not-for-profit operational concerns constituency is strictly not-for-profit organizations only. So they both fall within the NCSG and which is the non-commercial stakeholders group, and you can actually join the NCSG without joining the NCUC or the NPOC, which is also confusing. But there are significant benefits to joining the lower level and NCUC and NPOC, because you get to actually raise comments at those levels, in addition to at the NCSG level, in addition to at the GNSO level. So it's more of an opportunity to have a say.
So just one question more. So the membership in MPOC is as an organization, not as an individual.
Not-for-profit organizations. So not, yeah.
The microphone. If I am a member of the government, but also am member of the ISOC chapter, I can participate as a member of the ISOC
in MPOC. Okay.
So we have to be careful for conflicts of interest, right? So, for instance, so Tracy Hackshaw is the vice chair of our chapter, but he cannot be sitting on the GAC and sitting in the GNSO and sitting in the at-large. You can't do that. You can't have a vote in three places. However, the vibrance of ISOC chapters is the fact that we have a lot of multi-stakeholder members and who come from different backgrounds, and this is our strength. So it is really a benefit to us that we have a GAC representative, an active GAC representative, who you will meet just now. We have somebody on the executive of the NPOC, and we also have someone on the at-large. Before we wrap up, I'd just like to take the question that was over here very quickly.
Yeah, just a quick thing. My name is Naveed. Just to rephrase the question that she asked, so you mentioned two requirements to join NPOC, right? So one is to have domain name, the other one is to have nonprofit registration. I would like to ask, does a member that, or a potential member that wants to join NPOC, needs to carry some mandate from his parent or her parent organization, or he can, or he or she can join on its own? So that's just a clarification that I want to have.
Okay, I will answer that one. You're supposed to have a mandate from your parent organization. You're representing your parent organization. NPOC is very young. All of this is very young. The charter will probably be revisited. What hasn't been refined adequately yet is your accountability and responsibility back to that organization and that organization's involvement. So many organizations now have sent somebody, but we worry a bit about what kind of feedback and involvement. It can be good or minimal. We'd like to see it richer, but you do need to be sponsored by the organization. You can't. They have to know you're here, and hopefully they're asking you to be accountable.
Okay, just one point on that. While I did say domain name registration is important, it's not the sole factor. So, for instance, if you're an ISOC chapter, as I mentioned, and you do have a domain in your CCTLE, right? Then the focus is internet governance issues and the internet end user, right? So it also goes by what your focus is as an organization, right? Thank you.
All right, thank you, Cintra. Thank you so much. A round of applause for Cintra. All right, please. And let me just add very quickly that the conversation does not end here. Cintra, I'm sure, is going to be quite available.
Today is our constituency day.
You want to say that?
Yes. So today is our constituency day. So from 8:30 a.m. in Thames Suite, which is on the first floor, you're welcome to join us. Thank you.
Right. So what I was going to say just before Cintra jumped in was, that's fine, is that by all means, I'm sure Cintra will be more than willing and able to assist you with your questions, if you do have any questions. So please try and meet her, if it's in the corridors, at the coffee station, or in the meeting. And that's another question, because maybe they could come to the meeting and ask questions directly in the constituency. So if that is possible, and you do have questions, if it's not administrative questions, but other questions about the issues that have been discussed, by all means, please find your way to the NPOC meeting this evening. Cintra, I want to thank you so very much for livening up the debate and being here this morning. Thank you very much, Cintra. And also, where did he go? He's left.
Sam,
he's left already, but we do appreciate his attending here. All right. So now we move on to the GAC, and I want to introduce Tracy. And Tracy happens to be from the wonderful country of Trinidad and Tobago. So it's...
Jim.
There happen to be three Trinis in the room. And we call it a Trini posse. Yeah, so if anything happens to this table, that's it for Trinidad's and Tobago's participation in ICANN. Right, so
we move straight on to Tracy. I think that was done on spite, for purpose. Tracy Hakcho is the vice chair of the Government Advisory Committee. And, well, I shouldn't say anything more because that's what he is here to do. So, Tracy, straight over to you.
All right. Thank you, Carol. Good morning. How are you all feeling this morning? Good? How was the walk or the tube ride or whatever it was? Was it good? No? Yeah, I heard about this distance you have, but that's good. Get to get that, shake it off in the morning.
The blood pumping.
All right. So how many of you are here from government, who work in government in your home country? Oh, a few. That's good. And you know your GAC representative, all of you? Yes? No? Some of you actually are GAC reps. I see one here from Dominica, a fellow Caribbean member. You also, you're GAC rep as well? Excellent. So the GAC is, for those who don't know who the GAC is or have heard about the GAC and feel a little challenged by the GAC really is a very interesting, as Carol keeps using the word interesting, I'm using it in that UN way, which it means interesting group of individuals who sit and meet representing their jurisdictions and their countries for a week in ICANN to debate various issues, as Cintra would have said, that may be related to the policy process after the policies have been created. I believe you'd have gotten a presentation before on the whole ICANN structure and so on. So we are an advisory committee. So an advisory committee, obviously, is the group who advises during and after the fact, whereas the SOs are the groups who make the policy and create the documentation that we advise on. We also do advise on issues that may emerge that are not policy issues. In effect, as you're seeing on the slide, we advise on issues of public policy, and the difference between maybe what the GAC and, let's say, the at-large would do is that we advise on issues where there may be intersections or potential conflicts between what ICANN is doing and what regional, local, or international law is stating. So that's a peculiar difference between what we are doing and what other ACs might do. There are, I think, 3 or 4 ACs in ICANN. There's a Root Server and Stability Advisory Committee, I believe, the Security and Stability Advisory Committee, and the At-Large Advisory Committee, as well as the Government Advisory Committee. So I was a fellow just like all of you in 2009, I believe, or 8, can't remember when. I'm familiar with the whole 7 o'clock in the morning and the walking. We did a lot of walking in our days too. We weren't as nice as staying in the same hotel. We had to walk quite a few times. We had to walk from venue to venue. And when I first came to ICANN as a government employee, of course I gravitated towards the GAC to see what they were doing. But in those days, GAC meetings were closed. Many of the meetings were closed. So I got special permission because I represented my government, well, Trinidad and Tobago, although not officially here, and sat in a few of the meetings. But I also went and sat in a series of other meetings because I couldn't sit in all the GAC meetings. So I got a nice impression of what all the constituencies and the SOs were doing in a week. Mm-hmm. And it struck me that we were discussing the same issue, generally speaking, but from different points of view. I think it's very important to understand from a GAC perspective that governments themselves represent the public interest. At least that's what it's stated. And governments represent all stakeholders as government. And that's something that I think is very difficult, or it's a complex relationship within ICANN. So when governments say we're representing the public interest, governments are saying we're representing business, civil society, non-profit concerns, the lawyers. We represent everybody from the perspective of the public interest. Of course, all the various stakeholders may disagree, but that's the interest of government. And when governments meet, they bring all of those interests to the table. So when they are discussing issues in the GAC, it's supposed to be discussing all of the issues that relate to the public interest. I think that's very important to understand. So when you see, and you should come to a GAC meeting, today is a very good day to come, especially at, I think, 4:45 or 4 o'clock, when the board and the GAC meets, it's a sellout crowd, and everybody comes to that meeting. You tend to see, when the GAC speaks and the board responds, you tend to see those issues emerging and creating the necessary excitement, if necessary, or you know, it might not be as exciting as it could be, but it creates that environment where you're seeing all the issues being discussed. If you're going into another constituency, you may see a specific interest, like a legal interest, or the registrar interest, or business interest, or user interest. In the GAC, you're supposed to see all of the issues coming up. So I think that's important to understand for all who are interested in what the GAC is doing. Can I get the next slide, please? Thanks. So the GAC is not a decision-making body, and it's made up of a series of organizations. Let me just run through quickly. So within the GAC, we have, right? Good. Stop there. Wait, back one. Yeah. So in the GAC, we're not individuals. So you can't just walk into the GAC as an individual and say, look, I'm here. Or you can't join as an individual. You have to be an accredited representative of your national government or distinct economy. I know some economies are not in states or countries. So to join the GAC, if you're not already a member, you should look at their 140 countries and distinct economies currently members, but I believe they're in the UN list, there are over 200 of those. So there are still at least 50, 60 countries and distinct economies missing in the GAC. So if you're not currently a member of the GAC, and I believe there are many of us who might not be, your countries may not be members of the GAC, you should return home, find out what agency or ministry or whoever is involved in these issues, the internet, ICT, the digital economy, they may call it different things, and indicate to them what is your, you know, this is an interesting place to be. You should get involved. They may be involved in the ITU, but they may not be involved in ICANN. So encourage them to get involved and to join the GAC. We also are unique in a certain way in that we do have several observer members. They're not full members of the GAC in the sense that they are, if there was ever a vote, so to speak, they can't vote. The GAC doesn't vote as a rule, but if there was a vote, they can't vote. We have multinational governmental organizations, and that expands from everybody from the EU Commission, because the EU is not a country per se, but it's a union of the European states, the African Union Commission, straight down to, just recently, the Red Crescent joined. So we have a range of organizations that would span from truly intergovernmental organizations to those that may not be obviously so. You have Interpol, as a member of the GAC. They are not governmental, but they have the police around the world that join there. We have almost all the UN organizations, the WHO, WIPO, and so on. We have the OECD. We have, you name it, it's in the GAC. There are 30, I think there are 35 or 31 of these observers in the GAC today. So in total, the GAC has 170 odd members. And in a meeting, in this meeting, I believe the last number we have, there were 100 people, 100 members sitting in the GAC in London, which is the largest ever turnout for any meeting. So that's important to understand. We also have, as I said, treaty organizations, and that could be anything from the NPOC, groups in the NPOC, to outside who are not involved in ICANN at all. And as a matter of fact, many organizations' first taste of ICANN is in the GAC. And that's also very important to understand, that the Red Cross first related to ICANN within the GAC, lobbying the GAC about their, as Central mentioned, the names, protecting their names and acronyms on the at the top level. Next slide. All right, so these are who are the members of the GAC. Who are the members of the executive of the GAC. Canada, Ms. Heather Dryden, chairs the GAC. And Australia, Switzerland, and Toronto, Tobago our vice chairs. We're all in our final year, our final terms. So there'll be an a GAC election at the end of this year, and all members will, all the executive will change unless somebody shuffles the deck of cards. And again, if you want to join the GAC, meaning if your country wants to join, there's a way to do it. Write a letter formally to the GAC secretariat. So again, if your member country is not a member, please join. Next slide. Right. So the GAC is not a decision-making body. And that's important, and that creates a lot of conflict within the GAC and even within ICANN. We don't make decisions. We provide advice. However, there's a special rule for GAC advice within ICANN. When the GAC issues advice, and it's normally done either through something called a communique, which is issued at the end of every meeting, or letters that are sent in between meetings, or during meetings, that GAC advice, once it's called advice, needs to be considered by the board. Needs to be. Has to be. And very importantly, if the GAC advice is to be rejected, it triggers a bylaw within ICANN, meaning that to reject GAC advice, it has to be very serious, a very serious matter. If it's rejected, or they want to reject the advice, it triggers a mediation discussion between the GAC and the board. And that has happened, I think, once or twice before. And once that happens, it gets complicated. And normally, it gets resolved. If that happens, there's a compromise met between the GAC and the board. Although I believe in one case, it went ahead and rejected the advice outright, and then believe in .XXX, the .XXX case. So if you go and do some research, you'll notice in the .XXX scenario, the GAC advice was rejected outright. That was because of a legal issue that ICANN had to fulfill. The GAC conveys advice through consensus, not voting. And consensus is done through true consensus, meaning that if one country objects to the room, what's being said, there's no consensus. So it's not a rough consensus, which allow you can do the get more countries objecting and say, okay, the majority says this. One country can object and not have we don't have consensus. However, when agreement is not possible, the GAC must convey the range of opinions and a range of views. So you'll look at the communiques, you may see things like some members say have agreed to this, but others have not. Things like that. So what that is doing in the UN type language is conveying the range of views in the room. It's not normal that we convey who said what. So you wouldn't normally see that, you know, country X said this and country Y didn't agree. But you'll tend to see some and others or a few or those kinds of words that are used. Next slide, please. Thanks. Right. Normally in the GAC, there are two representatives, you know, one who will sit at the mic, another who sits advising the one on the mic. In practice, that's for small countries, that doesn't happen. So smaller countries, you tend to have a GAC member who does all the work of advising himself or herself accordingly, or gets advice from his home office or her home office. But larger countries may bring a delegation, so you may see, and if you go to the room, you'll see them. They'll sit on the side, the wings, or they may sit even at the table. You'll have two members sitting, one advising and one speaking, or both could be speaking at the same time. And again, all must hold a formal position in your country's government. So you're not supposed to be, I should say, not employed by the government in some form or fashion. There must be some role that you have in the government that you're being paid by them to play, that you can't just walk in, you know, from another group, like within ICANN, and just say, well, I'm here to advise you. And it works that way. It's supposed to be a formal situation. Excellent. So when do we meet? We meet three times per year during ICANN meetings, as well as intersessionally. We meet on email, believe it or not. We do meet a lot on email, literally meet on email. And on occasion, teleconferences before GAC, before meetings of the public meetings. There are normally one or two prep meetings that the GAC has on conference call, and slowly but surely, webinar type environments are starting to creep into the GAC. The GAC, of course, governments are slower than most to move towards the technology, as you might be aware. On today, Tuesday, in particular, the GAC meets with other organizations. It's a very good day for everybody to join into our. We're in the dungeon downstairs, and it's a big room. And today we meet with everybody. So if you want to see everybody meet with everybody, good day to meet us today. So the board meets with everybody today, but the GAC also does very similar. They meet with everybody today as well. So because our room, the GAC is so large, we don't go out. They come by us because we are too big to move. So even the board, I think, still comes to our meetings because it's what, 100 GAC members and 12 or 13 board members. So we sit in our room and people come to meet with us, unfortunately. So you can come and sit in the room today for the whole day and you'll see almost everybody coming and you'll get a range of views and opinions. And you actually will see, in my own personal view, the ALAC and the GAC, you may not believe it, but actually do have very similar positions and views from different perspectives, but similar views. And we do work quite well together. And when you see those meetings, you tend to find a lot of agreement and you know, shared opinions, whereas with other groups, it may not be as close. Next slide. All right. The GAC actually is one of the first groups to do full-blown UN interpretation plus Portuguese. So we've had that for about, I think, 3 years now. Is it, Jeannie, how long? 3 years. Yeah, so you've had, so, and you would see the GAC using that, and I think if you would have went to the high-level meeting, people would say, I'm going to speak in my native language now, almost as a, you know, deliberate exercise. I'm going to use an interpretation, so get your headphones. I'll wait till you get your headphones. I'm going to speak in Portuguese. So it's very interesting in that regard. And we have Arabic, we have Chinese, and so on. And there's been discussions, as Fadi would have said yesterday in our meeting, to move towards beyond the UN language system, you know, into Japanese and I think even Korean and so on. So they're moving into, want to move into a larger translation and interpretation scenario. Our website, the GAC website, gac.icann.org, is not the best looking website, but it actually has everything there. And I remember Jeannie, who used to work at the GAC, she was very diligent in putting everything there. Everything is on the GAC website. It's not pretty, but just click on the link and there's a whole list of things back to God knows when, you know, to the ancient times. There's all the advice that we've offered, all the correspondence that has been received and sent. There's something called a GAC. What's it called again?
The GAC Register of Advice.
GAC Register of Advice. An archive of all the advice, what the board has said, what the board has done. You want to say something?
Yes, just really quickly. Yeah. If you need help navigating the GAC website, I will be here all week.
I do reassure you, it's a wealth of knowledge. Anything you want to know about the GAC besides the basic stuff and the history, please go to the website. It's there. When people ask me questions often, I say, I will say, yes, here it is, but I provide the link, because actually it's all there. It literally is all there. And Jeannie was, I remember, very, very, very good at that when she was our secretariat. All right, the next slide. All right, so I'm not Albert, but that's it for me. Any questions? And I'm here for a bit at the end of the day as well. So
let's start on this side. Tracy, thank you so much. That was an excellent presentation. So let's start with you. You could get the ball rolling.
Thank you very much. I'm Babu from Nepal. Actually, I want to be clear about the process of joining to the GAC committee. I know that for every country, it has its own laws and regulations. So it is most important to be synchronized with the global policies. That means we have to follow with the global policy and come into the national policy. So I'm also involved in some kinds of policy-making process in the government of Nepal, like IPv4 to IPv6 network migration plan, CCTLD.NP domain regulations, administration, etc. like this. So I mean, what is the exact criteria of joining into this GAC as a pre-consultant like me? Or is it some? Do we require any kinds of government official process to join into the GAC, to involve into the GAC committee member? Or is it possible for me, like as an independent policy formulator, advisor for our own country, to join into this GAC?
All right, so the short answer is no. You have, as I said before in the presentation, your representative must be an accredited representative of the GAC, and we do check. And Jeannie used to check that. So a letter must come from your authority in your country that says this individual is accredited to represent the GAC. If you would like to be a GAC member, be on the list of members, on the GAC website, there's a list of representatives in detail, and two or three depending on what is said, then you should approach the... If Nepal is listed there, I'm not sure if it is. If they are, you should approach the agency or agencies who are represented and indicate your interest in representing the views either in a GAC meeting, in ICANN, or before. There's no harm. There's no rule that says you can't present papers or can't, you know, consult with your GAC representatives before. They don't know everything, trust me. So you can advise and guide your GAC members before a meeting, during a meeting. And that's a rule for everybody. Don't assume that because they're GAC members, you can't talk to them. Trust me, they're human beings just like you. They go and have beers. They go and, you know, they're normal people. They're not big, bad people sitting at, you know, so, yeah, they're people. So meet with them here at the ICANN meeting. When you go back to your home country, set up a meeting with them, get their names, call. I'm reasonably certain that in 99.9% of the cases, they will say, oh, great, somebody's interested in this very, this, you know, people think it's a very, you know, esoteric kind of niche issue. But if you're interested, talk to them. I'm sure they'll be want to hear what you have to say. So don't restrict it to being a GAC member or representative. Go back home and chat with your representatives and see what they have to say. Or if they're not, see how you can join.
Good morning. Thank you for your presentation. In fact, both ATLAT and GAC have a seat in the board. However, as far as I know, the at-large seat is has a voting right. Yeah, and the GAC seat has no voting right. Is there any explanation to that?
I can explain that the ALAC seat on the board was reasonably recent, and through lobbying and so on, they got a seat on the board, actual seat, a voting seat. The GAC situation is under discussion.
You wouldn't say more.
So there's a series of improvement committee type organizations that work on these kinds of things. So there was something called, and you could go to the GAC website as well as the ICANN website and look at the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, ATRT. There were two teams that met, one in that finished, I think, in 2009 or 10, and then one that started in 2013 and finished this, it took a year. And there are two reports, and in those reports, those kinds of issues have been brought up, meaning how the GAC can get more involved in the work of ICANN. There has been or have been discussions ever since I know the GAC, as well as very much recently, as to the role of the GAC in ICANN and why is it that the GAC is only advising and not more, you know, like a voting member on the board or whatever the word is. There are reasons for that. It's in the bylaws, and I would encourage you to read the bylaws. However, it's under discussion. And when I say it's under discussion, meaning that there are committees and working groups in place today dealing with those very same issues that are reasonably transparent, I think, Jeannie. I think the you may find them on his site, so I believe. There's something called the Board GAC Working Group, Recommendation Implementation Working Group, that would have met and is discussing those issues on a regular basis. So I encourage you to go and have a look and inform yourself, because there are complex issues involved. It's not a straightforward, why is they not voting? And I can tell you why. It's the way ICANN was structured and the way ICANN operates and issues like that. Because governments, for example, I'll give you an example. Governments, the GAC, gets decisions by consensus, but is that the view of government as a whole? Because you have different countries. And each country is sovereign. So if you have a GAC representative on the board who is from, I don't know, Timbuktu, if that's a country, that's apologies to those who might be. But if they're from Timbuktu, it's a city, right, yeah. Well, let's assume it was a country. Then would Timbuktu's representative on the board who votes be representing the GAC or representing the views of Timbuktu? Those are questions that are challenging, because how would they be able to represent all the views of the GAC on the board if they're voting on an issue? And because governments take very long to make a decision, how would they be able to do things so stop the voting process, I need to consult with the GAC, and then stop, the GAC says, I can't tell you now, let's go to consult our capitals, and that comes, maybe 3 months we'll tell you what the vote would be. So they're complex issues related to that, and it's under discussion.
So let me just remind everybody to keep their questions short, and also to please give us your name before you ask your question. Go ahead.
My name is Hafed. I'm from Tunisia. My question is related to, I noticed it on the slide, is that when it comes to GAC meetings, I saw that it's only 55 countries are attending this kind of GAC meetings. Do you mean that in terms of representativity, the GAC is around, can I say that GAC today is only about 55 countries?
No. So attending a meeting is a issue of funds and resources, and do you have the time to come to spend a week in country X and so on. So the GAC is 140 countries, 140 members. The actual people who attend a meeting once per year or three times per year varies. We have 100 countries in this meeting. We've had meetings where 40 odd countries attend. We've had meetings where 60 countries would have attended. So the face-to-face meetings are not necessarily the representation of what the GAC is. However, it's a rough sense of the active membership, meaning that the interest is so high that they're coming to the meetings, or they have the funds available to come to the meetings. The GAC provides now a travel support program for GAC members for developing countries primarily, and you tend to find an increase in GAC membership at the meetings because of that. Before, it was very little. I mean, there were less members. And on top of that, we have remote participation happening as well. So we have members coming in remotely during the meetings. And intersessionally, we have... In the intersessional meetings, you tend to find people who are not in the meetings physically contributing via email or otherwise. So it's not necessarily to the public meeting attendance.
All right, so we're going to be very tight now. So we have how many... I think we have time for three more questions, maybe. We have about 10 minutes left. So if you can keep your question very short and succinct, please give us your name and go right ahead.
My name is... Sorry.
Oui, bonjour. Je
suis Monsieur Lee Amadou. I am Mr. Lee Amadou. My name is Mr. Lee Amadou. I am a member in Senegal of the Telecommunication Association, and this is the first time that I participate as a member of this Telecommunication Association. And so I am trying to get an idea of what is going on right now. I am starting to understand what the GAC is. I understand what ALEC is. For countries like mine, because we are just starting out in the process, very often there are people, you know, who there is a lot of turnover in ministries and governments and so forth. And so right now, as far as being a member of the GAC or ALEC, shouldn't there be certain requirements within committees so that you might be a member of the GAC? Are there fees that you need to pay? Is there something that exists? I think that this is a very important opportunity that we have been offered right now with the U.S., you know, letting go of the work that they have done. They are letting governments, other governments, participate. And so with this new opportunity, African countries really should participate more. So as far as the internet, that provides a lot of mobility, a lot of access nowadays. And so our countries really need to know, need to get involved right now, very quickly.
All right, thank you. I'm going to speak slowly for the interpreters. So just to maybe, I don't want to correct you, but African members do participate in the GAC, and Senegal has been a member of the GAC for a very long time. Actually, they were one of the last vice chairs of the GAC. There are no fees to join. This is not the ITU. There are no fees to join, and there will never be fees to join the GAC. The way the GAC operates in the ICANN world, it's almost as a technical policy orientation. It's not political. And as I said, there are no votes, so that it's not similar to other organizations that you may have seen. And the question of whether governments are now being involved in the process, I don't think that's a fair statement. The GAC has been around for a very long time. The participation levels have been low and have only now been increasing because of awareness. The awareness issue wasn't there, but the governments have always been able to participate in the GAC and in the ICANN process. So my advice to any country, Africa, the Caribbean, the Pacific, any developing Asia, is to look to see if your representative is there, because what could be happening, and you're not aware, is that your representative is extremely active in the GAC. You may not even be aware of that, because I know Kenya has been very active, Nigeria has been very active, South Africa has been very active, and so on. So countries that are participating in the GAC from the African continent have been there for a while. And while it's growing now, I think the discussion should be how you can get your views maybe coordinated as to one. Right now, it's each country's position. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in doing something like that, there's something you could chat with your reps and see how best you can work together. And so if you don't have all the African members here, the views of Africa through the AUC, as an example, could be represented. Yeah.
Okay, Zheng Shui. Yes.
My name is Xiaohui Zhang. I'm from China. I have two questions. The first one is, what's the difference between the GAC and the cross-communicating working group in ICANN? And the second question is, I took a part in the LEM coalition session yesterday. I know that a registry or registrar, if the registry or registrar receive ICANN's LEM coalition report, if they give the reason, they can respond to the report. The reason is that they they want to comply their government's laws or orders, or just because they want to protect their country's security. And they say the reason is not, it cannot be easily agreed on the global basis. I want to know the viewpoints of GAC on this topic. Thank you very much.
Right. What was the first question? The first one was,
I didn't get it.
Was it Ramani for this question? Right, so the cross-community working group is, for the native English speakers, it means across the community, people from the community on a working group. So that means that a member from the GAC, a member from the GNSO, a member from the RSAC, a member from the ALAC, all the members of the community can get together in one working group and discuss issues that's across community. So they span the entire community, the IANA transition, internet governance, those kinds of issues. So the difference is that the GAC is one element and the cross community is a larger element. You know, it's a superstructure. So that's okay. Okay. And the other issue, actually there are reports on name collision and registrar. On the GAC website, there's a series of documents that if you're very interested in that area, you can see what the GAC has to say on it. The views within the GAC are very complex. The U.S. view is different from, let's say, the view of China on those issues. You may want to have a look at see what the position of the GAC is, or ask your GAC rep what their position is, because, as I said, the GAC advice comes as a consensus, but you would see working groups and reports that have been generated in the GAC, or papers, or working group statements that would probably exist within either the advice or the communiques and so on about name collision, registrar, contracts and agreements. And those are active things that are happening now within the GAC. So if you were to come to a meeting today, I believe that could be under discussion, both with the board and with the, I think, the GNSO. It might be under discussion with GNSO today.
Thank you very much.
All right. I know there was a question in the back.
Good morning. Thank you, Tracy. Bill from Papua New Guinea. My question is, as GAC, recently there are countries with restrictions to social media, internet. Does GAC play any role in that, in advising? Thank you.
Well, no. The GAC doesn't get involved in content issues. Let me rephrase that. The GAC is not supposed to get involved in issues of the content and those kinds of things. They're not supposed to. In fact, ICANN as a whole is not supposed to deal with content. We are names and numbers and routing. If it is that the GAC itself, themselves are doing that, it may be discussed in a GAC meeting, but very unlikely. You would not likely see a country's name being mentioned as having blocked or blocking social media or other sites, even though it may be known that that's happening. So those issues do not come up in the GAC. Whether that's good or not is not my point, my observation. But I know it comes up in other sessions. So if you go to another group, you may find that being discussed. But certainly in the GAC, it's not being discussed as a separate issue under censorship or anything, because content is not supposed to be the domain of ICANN or the GAC, content issues.
Oh, thank you. All right, we have so many quick questions that let's take them in order. So was it Maritza next? Did you have a question? Okay, Maritza next.
Thank you very much. It's very short, Tracy. My name is Maritza Huero. I'm from Peru. So you said in the first slide that GACS, it is an advisory committee, and that also gives advice for national and international policy. So does it mean that GAC also, for example, gives like a letter or a communication to government if it is doing like something against internet governance or internal policies? Thank you very much.
So no, I think you may have misunderstood about national. We advise on the basis of national and regional and local policy and law. We don't advise the other way. So the GAC doesn't advise its governments, advises ICANN. That's its job. In the GAC, however, members of the GAC will take back from the meeting information to go back and advise their government. So a country would be able to say, well, so this is happening in the GAC, in ICANN. our laws are such that it can or cannot happen, and we advise our government accordingly. But the GAC as a whole doesn't advise governments. It can't. The GAC doesn't. It only advises ICANN. That's how it works. The GAC doesn't exist without ICANN. It's a. The GAC is not a separate body. It doesn't have a legal structure. The GAC is a creature of ICANN, so it advises ICANN. So there's no legal structure outside of that. So it can't advise anybody else except ICANN.
Sorry. All right, so I'm going into queue, so I know if you do have a question, just bear with us. Martin did have a question, so Martin, go ahead.
Yes, it's a quick question. I don't want to get into every debate, but just to have an idea, an example of what are the most important things that the GAC is discussing right now, what kind of topics are the GAC interested or the members of the GAC are interested in discussing?
All right, so I'll preface that by directing to the GAC website where the agenda and so on is, and so I'll give you a summary of what the issues are, but feel free to look at the website. It's all there. But the issues that are currently under engaging the GAC right now are remnants of the new GTLD program. So the remnants of the, there's something called safeguards. So now that the program is implemented and they're dot everything happening, some of the right of the dot issues are regulated industries. So like dot doctor and dot pharmacy and so on. So the GAC and the board are still discussing those kinds of issues and how to implement those safeguards to ensure that there are not any abuses of the registries done and so on. The GAC is currently engaging in the WHOIS reports that are coming out now. Expert Booking Group has been reporting on that. They're engaging on the future GTLD wrong program, so we're preparing in advance for that program. They're engaging on the IGO issue and the protection of those names within the IGO. I'm not going to say that one. GTLDs, and they're also engaging on security and stability issues that could be numerous. So I encourage you, I mean, I can't list them all, but I encourage you to actually come today. You will see in the board meeting, you're probably going to see all the issues compressed into an hour being raised. Good session to come and listen to. And again, feel free to look at the website. It's really, there's something called a GAC scorecard for the GTLD process. Look at that as well, and you'll see all the things that have happened that have been ticked off, as well as those that are still outstanding. So it's pretty complex and kind of laundry list of things that are happening.
All right, some good stuff. We have Victoria next, and we'll come over to you.
Victoria from Moldova. Thank you, Tracy, for your presentation. I would like to ask you about the problem around the .wine GTLD. I know that this issue is being discussed from Buenos Aires meeting at the GAG. So what's really the problem there? Is that a country wants to monopolize this GTLD in order to commercial issue and just industrial? Thank you.
Right. So the website would be a good place to have a look. And in summary, the issue really is, and I think if you look at some of the, if you just simply do a Google search on the issue, you will see I think the fundamental issue, and has been said by ICANN's board, is whether or not an issue that can't be resolved in other fora can be resolved in the ICANN world. And that's the main discussion. So without getting into the details, which you can read there, can you resolve something, because it's about geographic indicators. And for those who don't know what that is, that's a very long-standing trade debate that's been going on around the world about, you know, cheese and wine and all these kinds of things, about where they're from and how they can use the names like Bordeaux and Champagne and what's the thing, feta cheese, those things, Parmesan, all those kinds of things that have geographic indicators linked to them. If they're not able to be resolved in the space that is where World Trade Organization or WIPO, can it be resolved in ICANN? I think that's the debate that's going on. And if you have a look at the advice as well as the ICANN website and all the board, and that's public. There are some letters that are published just 2 days ago from the board back to the various governments. You'll see the issue. You'll get a sense of what's going on.
So that's not the GAG's responsibility to decide
on. Oh, boy.
Right. Okay, people, please accept my sincerest apologies, but the next speaker is here, and we do not want to eat into his time and his question and answer period. So what I'm going to suggest is that you do take the conversation to Tracy, either on email. He's part and parcel of the fellow alumni, so he's more than happy and willing to answer the questions via email, or please, by all means, do see him. He did invite you to the GAC meeting today. It's downstairs in the dungeon, so you may see that there was that place where there's torches on the wall. So if not, catch him in the corridors at the coffee table in between meetings. So I do want to apologize to those people who did not have an opportunity to answer questions, but the conversation continues. Trust me, it does continue via email or elsewhere otherwise. All right, so Tracy, thank you so much. A round of applause for Tracy. From Trinidad and Tobago, did I mention? Sorry. So we're moving on. So thank you so much, Tracy. You want to say something?
Please just make sure that you've signed in the registration sheet. Has anybody not signed? Okay. Yeah. There we go. That's okay.
Just a note before the start of the next speaker. Sorry, just a note. I'd like just to add about Tracy, who for whom who don't know Tracy. Tracy is can wear multiple hats. So you can ask him about IPv6 also, about DNS, about open source software. How can we enhance our economies in our countries, developing countries, by using open source software? It was my mentor, my tutor in NGL course. It's a really dynamic person. And go ahead. Thanks, Tracy, for your presence.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Right. Okay, thank you so much for that. And Tracy is a great guy, and he's really willing to assist anybody, no matter who it is, on any issue that you may have. So please, by all means, do seek out Tracy. Right, so without any further ado, we'll now move on to Mr. Bill Drake from the non-commercial users constituency. Bill, I know your time is limited, so right over to you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you. Always happy to do this. Every meeting, I meet with the fellows briefly. I teach at the University of Zurich in Switzerland, and I am the chair of the NCUC. The NCUC is a civil society coalition within the GNSO, the Generic Name Supporting Organization. It goes back to 1999, so it's been around now for 15 years. I don't have the ability to read the tiny little letters to remember, but I think what it says is that we have about 357 members from 81 countries, including 95 non-commercial organizations and 262 individual members. So thank you. And I could go back one page and we're all good. So NCUC, as I say, operates within the GNSO. Now, one of the first questions fellows always ask me whenever I come and do this is, how is the civil society grouping within GNSO different from at large? So let's just start, and how is it different from other parts of the GNSO that are also non-commercial, such as the nonprofit operational concerns constituencies? So let me just clarify very quickly. So at large is the ALAC is an advisory committee to the board. It does not directly make policy. It provides advice to the board on the full range of ICANN issues. And its members are both commercial and non-commercial users. That means it's basically multi-stakeholder. They have civil society as well as business people who are concerned from a user standpoint in the operations of ICANN and its policies. The GNSO is actually a policy-making body. It makes policy for the generic top-level domain space, .com, .org, et cetera, et cetera, and votes directly. The GNSO Council coordinates the process. We have, of course, working groups and all kinds of things within the GNSO representing all the different industry factions as well as civil society. And the GNSO Council coordinates that process and also votes on final policy decisions, which then go to the board for ratification. And there's a mathematical formula for when things, when the board must basically take what the GNSO says, and under other conditions, it can say no, we don't like this, or modify it, or ignore it, or whatever. Although they shouldn't do that. The GNSO is broken into four stakeholder groups. There's the registries, the registrars on the supply side, or the contracted party house, and on the non-contracted party house, that's to say people who were not regulated by ICANN under contract, you have a commercial stakeholder group, which includes the internet service providers and the business constituency and the intellectual property constituency. That's one stakeholder group. And then the other stakeholder group, one quarter of the GNSO structure, is the non-commercial stakeholder group. Rafiq Damak, who's behind me, will be speaking for a few minutes about that. He's the chair of that. So within the NCSG lives two constituencies, and we are one of the two. So, okay, that's, you know, keeping the org chart clear in your head. Not the easiest thing that I can. It's a world of acronyms. The bottom line is that we have been involved in the process of making policy on generic top-level domains for 15 years. We are also different from the other two bits I mentioned in that you individuals, members, as well as organizations, can join the NCUC. So anybody who is committed to the preservation, the promotion of non-commercial interests, and the preservation of non-commercial spaces or uses on the internet can be can apply and join the NCUC. So we get a lot of members that we almost every meeting. Actually, my bag is behind me. Sorry.
Is it behind?
Yes, the brown bag. I still have a few brochures left. I'll hand them out. We had a civil society outreach event on Friday, which was very well attended, where we brought together members of NCUC with people from civil society organizations that are not involved in ICANN to talk about why being involved in ICANN can be an interesting thing. And unfortunately, I gave away most of my brochures, but there's still a few left if you would like to look. I'm passing them around. In any event, what have we been involved in for the past 15 years? We started out very much focused on civil liberties and human rights type issues. We've had a longstanding commitment to the promotion of privacy and freedom of expression in particular in the internet environment, as well as access to knowledge and ensuring that intellectual property protections built into ICANN policies for generic top-level domains are not overly expansive and hence restrictive of people's ability to access and share knowledge and information. We've also been very concerned from the beginning with issues of consumer choice more generally the accountability, transparency, and functioning of ICANN. More recently, our membership has been expanding fairly rapidly. Many people have been joining NCUC over the past few years, and as that has happened, and as the internet governance agenda globally has expanded, and many of us are very much involved in the United Nations-based processes, the Internet Governance Forum, and the WSIS prior to that, World Summit on Information Society, and many related processes, with our agenda has sort of gotten broader as well. Our engagement on global internet governance issues generally has expanded, and we have become more interested as well in questions of development and the concerns of developing countries. So these have been issues that we have been pressing quite a lot, thank you, in recent years. How do we actually participate in the policy process? We do a number of things. We, on the one hand, we elect our leadership every year. So I'm elected in the fall, and we also have an executive committee which comprises representatives from each of the five ICANN regions. So we've got Africa, Asia Pacific, Latin America, Europe, North America, and of course we then appoint people to various bodies within the NCSG, the stakeholder group, and within the GNSO process more generally, working groups, things like this. So one thing there is we participate in electing six council members to the generic name supporting organization council, which vote directly on policies. So in effect, we directly participate in voting on final decisions. For example, I was on the GNSO council for 4 years, and I got to vote to launch internationalized domain names. In multilingual domain names and various other types of things like that. So one thing is direct participation in the policy process. We also do things like adopting policy statements on many types of issues. And lately, we have been doing this more at the stakeholder group level than the constituency level because we try to coordinate with our colleagues from the other constituency, NPOC, and do things at a stakeholder group level so that we have a position for the entire civil society configuration, not just our piece of it. So as you see, for example, on our website, ncuc.org, the front page says civil society submits comments on IANA transition and accountability. So we've recently adopted these positions on these issues. And we've often, over the years, been sort of a catalytic force in dealing with a lot of these kinds of questions, sometimes to the chagrin of the board and other players who don't always agree with our strong global public interest, civil rights, human rights orientation. But c'est la vie. That's part of the process. When you're making policy in a multi-stakeholder environment, the process is that all of the different interests come together, and you bargain, you negotiate, you try to come to a final resolution that everybody can live with, and we provide that voice for those kinds of non-commercial values. So we participate in the policy process, we put people into working groups, we adopt statements. We do a lot of lobbying and working with people on different issues. Yesterday there was a meeting on the new, the proposed replacement to the WHOIS database, and NCUC people were very involved in that meeting in pressing the members of the committee that have put forward the new model, the RDS, for clarifications on exactly how privacy is protected and guaranteed by this new model and so on. This is the kind of thing we do. Come, push, be a pain in the butt. But it's an important thing to do. Somebody has to do it in ICANN because otherwise you very well could have a situation where the policy process basically just results in outcomes that are reflecting the interests of large businesses and so on to the exclusion of citizens, users, public interest considerations. So it's all a question of achieving a balance through negotiation to blend those different aspects together. Finally, is this clickable? One other thing we do. I don't have my glasses on, but like for example, we organize a lot of conferences and events. Many of us are academics, so that's that's a perhaps part of the problem there. But so, for example, at the Singapore meeting, I organized this conference on ICANN and global internet governance, which was a preparatory meeting for the Net Mondial meeting that was held in April. In Sao Paulo, and we brought together people from across the ICANN community. If you look at this list of who's on here, we basically reached out to every part of ICANN to get them engaged in discussing what are the issues that would be taken up at the Net Mondial and what types of positions should the ICANN community be promoting. And we do a lot of those things. There's other events. We've held a number of conferences, workshops, and other things as well. So that was a very fast-spoken overview because I have to go run today from 9 o'clock to 12:30. We have a – can we go back? Let's see. I don't have my glasses. It's terrible. I should put my glasses on before I do these things.
Do you know where it is?
I tried to go home page and then the link for our meeting today. Is that here?
Yes, it's this one.
That one, draft agenda.
9 to 12:30.
Yeah. So today is Constituency Day. And on Constituency Day, the different parts of the ICANN environment get together for their own internal processes. NCUC holds a 3.5-hour meeting every day, Tuesday. And today we have a very full agenda. I've invited the entire United States delegation to come over and meet with us for an hour to talk about a range of internet governance issues, including the IANA transition, accountability, and the larger geopolitical stuff. You may have heard Fadi's announcement the other day of a so-called Net Mundial Alliance. So we'll be asking about all those kinds of things. So that should be a very interesting meeting. We will also have coming over two representatives from the Council of Europe to talk about the paper that they've just released on how to build in human rights mechanisms and protections into ICANN's operations. So they'll come over, and we will also have our own discussions then about a number of other issues pertaining to accountability and global internet governance. So the meeting is open to anybody. Anybody who would like to come over, please feel free to pop in and introduce yourself. We'll be in Cadogan, which is on the mezzanine level of this wing, so it's just above the bar, so we can look down and watch everybody getting drunk at 9 a.m. So that's fun. You know, as I say, seriously, you're all welcome, and you're all also welcome if you're interested to apply to join NCUC as well. Okay, so with that, we have 10 minutes, and questions, please. And please introduce yourself when you ask a question. Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, can you use the...
Press the mic.
The headset?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes, sure. Because...
Yeah. I'm not awake yet. I'm not a morning person. They always ask me to do these things in the morning. It's very painful. Go ahead.
Me too.
Okay.
I'm not clear about my question. Well, I know what I want to ask, but I don't know how to make my question. So if my question is confusing, I apologize. I've heard these days that the ICANN only works with domain names and addresses. They don't get into content issues. They don't deal with freedom of expression and those things. If there are restrictions in some countries regarding internet access, the ICANN does not deal with that. In your presentation, your excellent presentation, I heard that you work on human rights issues related to the generic domain name policy. So could you give me an example of a situation, a conflict situation that may impact human rights for me to understand the scope of what you do and what type of things you do? Do you make recommendations, proposals? I think the concepts are quite accurate within the ICANN, so I'd like to know exactly what you do. Could you give me an example for me to understand this better, to know to what point you get?
It's a very good question, and first of all, I'm sorry for talking so fast. I was trying to cover a lot quickly, and I had too much coffee in the morning. So I hope you followed everything I said, and if not, you can always email me and follow up, and I'll try to explain further. The role of ICANN in the larger internet governance environment is actually fairly limited. However, under Fadi's leadership, there has been a greater effort to engage in some of the global level discussions by supporting the Internet Governance Forum and things like that, and launching this Net Mundial process and so on. But generally speaking, ICANN's remit, ICANN's main core business, is indeed the governance of names and numbers. It's a fairly bounded, well-defined scope of activity. Now, within that activity, I can, if being a global policy mechanism, does not engage in looking at national policies and whether they conform to certain types of obligations, such as in human rights, things like that. That's not really within its remit. However, it should be understood that many of the policies that are adopted with regard to generic top-level domains do, in fact, have clear implications from a human rights type standpoint. So, for example, freedom of expression. When the new GTLD program to launch all the new top-level domains was being designed, we had a very intense debate about the question of how does one build into the process provisions concerning so-called morality and public order. And there were governmental demands to have quite expansive rules that would say whenever a government thinks that a new proposed GTLD is not desirable on morality grounds, however it sees morality, they should be able to block it. So, for example, we had to get in and spend a lot of time fighting to ensure that that language was narrowly defined, that the scope for governments blocking new GTLDs would have to be in compliance with international law, done on a consensus basis within the GAC, etc. For example, there are governments who did not want .gay. There are governments that did not want .Islam. There are governments that did not want all kinds of domain names that they consider to be sucks or WTF, which is an acronym you may be familiar with. There are many cases where governments said, we do not like this particular form of expression being built into the character strings at the top level of the internet that encourages a certain way of communicating and a certain kind of sensibility that we don't support. And so we have tried to ensure that that is not overly expansive. Similarly, with regard to issues like privacy, as I say, there is a new proposal now to replace the WHOIS system, which is the database that allows you to look up who runs a website, with a new system. One of the problems we have fought on the WHOIS issue for 15 years, because basically there's almost no effective privacy protection built into the WHOIS structure. And indeed, the WHOIS structure is arguably incompatible with such things as European data protection laws. Because basically, you know, if you are a human rights activist, if you are a person who's trying to avoid a stalking ex-boyfriend, if you are a person, you know, any kind of situation where you might not want your personal information to be made readily available to anybody, you are faced with a difficult choice because, in fact, in the WHOIS system, it's quite easy to access this information. Now, there have been the addition of new privacy services that you can pay to try to provide some levels of protection, but still, fundamentally, your information is pretty easily available. So from a privacy protection standpoint, that is a real human rights issue. And so we have advocated for stronger privacy protections, and now they are contemplating this whole new system, which is supposed to make things a little bit better in this regard, but actually because of the way it's been designed and it's quite technical, there are some real problems from a privacy protection standpoint. And this is why we have been pushing very hard and filing comments, and we're, as I say, we're inviting the Council of Europe people over today. We reached out to European data protection inspectors a couple of years ago and said, hey, are you aware of what ICANN is doing here? Because we don't think it's consistent with your policies. And the European data inspectors came back and said, you are right. We think ICANN's policies are not consistent with our requirements under the European laws. So this is the kind of thing where we try to get people engaged to promote a better balance between commercial, governmental, and non-commercial objectives.
That's excellent. I just wanted to say that was one of the best, excellent question. It's something that always was on my mind, you know, ICANN's domain names, but there's so many other issues that have been discussed. And how does it then translate into what ICANN does? So thank you, Bill. We have time for one more. Yeah?
Yes, I'm here.
there's somebody, but let's take, how about if we just take a couple real quick, and I'll give a real quick response.
All right.
So quick one. My name is Edwin Opari.
Can you speak into the microphone, please? Thank you.
Morning. My name is Edwin Opari. And I'm wondering, how long does it take for membership to be approved when one applies to be an NCUC member? Because I remember I did apply for membership sometime in January. And I only got an email from you about 2 days ago asking me to clarify why I want to be an NCUC member.
You didn't receive an email from me. Rafiq is the chair of the non-commercial stakeholder group. Okay. When you apply to join, you join the stakeholder group, and then you select your constituency within it. Okay. The executive committee of the NCSG meets every month or so to review the new batch of applications. When they approve them, they then come to us, and we say, okay, we approve them, and then they go into the system. So, and that means it has to be negotiated with NPOC and others, so it just takes a little time. Okay. But we'll get there.
Yeah, just...
Yes.
My name is Naveed. I just want to know how you ensure the protection of non-commercial users in the presence of organizations that may be commercial in essence. So that's a hard challenge to meet, I believe. So do you do some measures that ensure the protection of, because individual users at the end, because I see that's the only interface that they have at ICANN or a community like that.
Yes. Again, a good question, and the answer is simply, we can't ensure anything. We are one part of a larger community that negotiates policies. We try to promote the insurance of those objectives, but we have to negotiate with the internet service providers, the intellectual property interests, the business interests, the registries, the registrars, and ultimately the governments. And so, you know, we can't unilaterally select the outcome. We try our best to advocate. Yeah. That's what we do. Sure. And then finally, yes, yeah. Please.
Yeah, my name is Yusuf.
Hi.
Yeah. I'd like to know why does it take a long time for one to become a member when you apply? And the prison vote is also not all that clear, it's complicated.
Again, the membership process is not one that I control. People apply to the stakeholder group. The stakeholder group lets us know, and then we approve it as soon as we receive it. So sometimes it can take a month or two. I don't know. You would have to ask Rafiq. He manages the process.
Okay.
And finally, yes.
Okay. Nabil from Morocco. I'd like to ask you about, my question is about related to the speech of the Minister of China of yesterday.
An interesting one. Harmony.
He said that...
Kumbaya.
He said that we are in the process of transition of... he didn't mention IANA. He said that this is the unlock of ICANN from the United States. So how can you explain this? He didn't use the term of IANA, but he used instead ICANN.
I think, as you know, the United States has proposed to transition the authority over the IANA functions to the global multi-stakeholder community, and one possible, an obvious result there would be that the policy process pertaining to the IANA functions would be something that would be based in ICANN. Whether the operational part will also be based in ICANN is not determined yet, but this is a part of a larger transition where ICANN is attempting to become less U.S.-centric than it was historically, for obvious reasons, and to bring in the global community more fully in the full range of decision-making and so on. FADI has a number of initiatives in that regard, and the Chinese are saying, in effect, that we support that transition, think it should go further, faster, and so on and so forth. As to the specific code language that the Chinese ambassador might choose to use in expressing that and how you can deep read that, there's many different ways of going about that process. And I'm in no better position to read the mind of the Communist Party of China than probably you are. But I think certainly it's an interesting question. It was an interesting speech. So I'm very sorry. I have to stop. My colleague Rafiq will now take over. He's both an NCUC member and the chair of the NCSG. So he will tell you what happens at the stakeholder group level. And again, anybody who wishes to come over to our meeting, we start at 9 o'clock across the way. Okay? Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much, and a round of applause for Bill Drake. And I think I know where I will be today. All right, so moving quickly onward, we now have Rafiq Damak. I can't read that slide.
I know, it's hard to see.
Yeah, there we go. So
non-commercial
stakeholders group. So Rafiq, can you come closer so we can have your input on your very important constituency? So over to Rafiq.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, everybody. I think it's easy, ncag.is.
Yeah.
It's a really easy one. Thanks. I think we have really short time.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think it's more about to get the question. Because I guess you had INPOC representative in the morning.
Yeah,
Sintra and just have been. So this they are the chair of the two constituency. But NCAG, as you know, it's the non-commercial stakeholder group, and we work at the stakeholder group level, and we elect our councillors to the GNSO Council, so we elect six people there. And we really work mostly on doing the policy at the stakeholder, at the stakeholder level. So we, I think, as you get the explanation, really we care about human rights, freedom of expression, privacy, development, so one of the best example, we really push it for the support of new GTLD applicant from developing countries. Okay, speak more louder.
Yes, please.
You have someone louder now. It's
there
less louder.
You go.
Okay.
Thank you. Big voice.
Okay, so as explained, we do a lot of policy. So we have the two constituency. Any person can join the NCAG, and he can select to join NCUC or NPOC or both, or don't join them or whatever. It's up to him. So because we do a lot of our activity at the stakeholder group level. But I think I will be happy to get more questions. I don't have presentation, but can you just... This is the that's the GNSO page.
Is this all right? Or do you want to...
Can I...
Yes, please.
So we have a nice domain name, ncag.net. So this is our space. You will find what we are doing in terms of comment. For example, we submitted comment about the accountability of ICANA accountability, IANA transition. And it was mostly led by our members, a really new member, the Article 19. So I guess we can maybe start with it.
Thank you, Rafiq. And that's actually good timing because we are limited in time. So are there any questions for Rafiq at this point in time?
Don't be shy.
A very quick question which is related. Can you, Rafiq? Hafid from Tunisia. Can you, Rafiq, tell us a little bit about the accountability?
I mean, description what we said? As a stakeholder group, we have a kind of issue with the accountability within ICANN. We got specific issue regarding the trademark clearinghouse, and in the time we find that the appealing process within ICANN, I mean, to appeal any decision made by the ICANN board, we find it's not functional. We tried the several steps, the several process, and we found it's not functional. But mostly what we are trying, we try to explain in that comment, is going through the question and really proposing how we can appeal the board decision. And we also think that the accountability should be done really before that the IANA transition, because without accountability, it will be hard after, I mean, the IANA transition, the stewardship of the IANA from the NTIA to whatever, we don't know what. It will be really hard without accountability mechanism, really strong accountability mechanism, to have to enforce anything on ICANN and the ICANN board.
Anybody else? Any other questions? Okay, if not, I want to thank Rafiq very much for.
That's what's really quick.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, fantastic.
But I guess I can make some.
Yep, of course, additional.
So, I know it was quite short. You had a lot of about the constituency, which can create some confusion. So, if you want to join, it's really you need to start to join the NCHG. And when you become member, you can join any constituency. I know that some fellows applied, some of them were accepted, some of them they have pending application that we need to get more information to check they are non-commercial. So you join, I think you can go to, so it's really, about us. Okay, that's me, before losing weight. Okay, so it's really simple application, just Google form. You will select if you are individual, if you want to join as organization, you fill it, and the executive committee will review it. Also, we have in the afternoon from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. our meeting, and it's mostly to prepare our joint meeting with the board from 3:30 to 4:30. It's a really interesting time that the community can interact with the board. We can question them. We can ask them hard questions. And you are really, I really encourage you to come because you can also ask in that time. So please join, if you want, the NCUC or NPOC meeting. And I think they start at 9. Then join NCAG and join us at the meeting with the board. So I think it's for our meeting in the Stamis suite, and in the board, I think it's in the main bar room.
Thank you. Thank you, Rafiq. And yes, you do have some applications apparently outstanding. So you may want to look into those because...
because we are quite open structure, we don't ask people for fees. We welcome everybody. Other constituency, it's more really complicated to join them. But... we get many applications, we need to do due diligence to check if they are non-commercial because GNSO rules and several charter of the different stakeholder group and constituency prevent someone to be a member of Tutu constituency. You will ask why. Because it's also about voting. Because if you join us, you will have vote rights and you will elect someone to GNSO Council, which means someone will have influence in the policy making. So if you join two constituencies, it's something, conflict, yeah, and trying to influence two constituencies or to stakeholder groups, something, cannot be accepted. So that's why. But even you have application, just we really want to clarify or to understand what's your non-commercial background. So no worry about that. And if you have any specific question, just ask me later, no problem.
Thank you, Rafiq, and a round of applause for Rafiq, please. We do appreciate all the information, and as he did say, you can always follow up, if not here, later sometime today. Okay, I'm going to pass it to Jenny, who has a few... housekeeping notes / information for us. So, Jeannie, sorry.
It's okay. Like I said, I answer to just about anything at this point. So, just a quick reminder that this afternoon, I'm looking at the room, just a second, in Balmoral, where we had the newcomer and morning fellowship session on Sunday, is the fellowship meeting with the ESSEC. So they have had some topics and questions delivered to them. They're ready to come and talk to you. And Patrick, the chair, is really looking forward to it. Tomorrow morning, as of this moment, we are meeting in the Palace Suite, not this room. The Palace Suite down in the dungeons at 7 o'clock in the morning, where it will no doubt be cold. So please bring sweaters, coats, hats, mittens, anything you could possibly imagine. We're still trying to get the room moved back here, so please keep an eye on your emails for a room change. If there are any other questions, please let me know, and I'm here. If you have questions for Tracy or Sintra or Rafiq or Bill, send them to Janice, and she will get them answered for you. So everybody have a really productive day, and please come find me if you have any questions at all. Take care.